Welcome to the first edition of Justice Works Radio, a weekly conversation about the fight for a New York that works for all of us. I'm Roberto Lobianco, Citizen Action of New York's Communications Manager. This week I'll be talking to Mark Emanation, Citizen Action's Capital Region Organizer, and Joanna Nadeau, a volunteer with Focus Churches, about the growing movement to raise the minimum wage in New York. And we'll hear from Executive Director of Democracy Matters, Joan Mendel, and Adam Eichen, a Vassar College senior, who are organizing college students to combat money in politics. But first up is Karen Scharf, Citizen Action's Executive Director, and Jordan Belisai, Canvas Director for Citizen Action for Fair Elections. They'll talk about the outcome of this year's midterm elections, the Republican resurgence in the New York State Senate, and what it means for the fight for a fair New York.
Can you tell me about your reactions to the election outcomes from last Tuesday's election?
On Tuesday, unfortunately, a million fewer voters turned out than in previous gubernatorial elections in New York State, and obviously even a smaller turnout compared to presidential election years. And with a roughly only a third of registered voters, which is already only half of potential voters in New York turning out to vote, we had a very skewed electorate deciding the outcome of the elections. And as a result, they elected a majority Republican Senate, which is going to work against the interests of ordinary New Yorkers.
One of the things that Republicans are saying is that they're going to block an attempt to raise the minimum wage. And one of the big things that came out of this election is that the funders who are funding the Republican candidates are really big business groups like real estate brokers and hedge fund managers. Do you see a connection between those two things?
Absolutely. I mean, the other really unfortunate thing we've watched through this whole election cycle is that big money was dominant. The real estate industry from New York City and the hedge fund managers who want to see the expansion of charter schools poured millions and millions of dollars into these elections, all on the side of the Republican Senate candidates. And they did that not because they liked the candidates. They probably didn't even know the candidates. They did that because what they're hoping for is a Senate that's going to send taxpayer money to privately run charter schools in New York City, and that's going to eviscerate tenant protection so that landlords can make more money in New York City. So their contributions to these campaigns were completely driven by the by their own greed for greater profits. And average everyday New Yorkers are going to see the results, which is a Senate that not only is taking money from our public schools for privately run schools and hurting tenants, but also a Senate that won't raise the minimum wage for millions of New Yorkers who can't put food on the table right now at $8 an hour. And on a host of other issues, the Republican Senate has announced during the campaign and has reaffirmed since the election day that their agenda is not the agenda of working families in New York. Their agenda is the agenda of the billionaires and millionaires.
Jordan, you were really working on the ground to get voters engaged and get people to turn out. That can be a really tough job when people seem kind of apathetic about the elections in a lot of ways. So what was, like, motivating for you and for your canvassers going out there?
So we found when we were engaging voters in the 46th Senate District that it was very refreshing to them that we were talking about issues and not just a candidate when we were there for Citizen Action of New York. And our two main issues was raising the minimum wage and fully funding our schools. And these seemed like common sense ideas to the everyday voter, but for some reason they still don't get passed year after year.
That's right. About 70% of New Yorkers support raising the minimum wage. And one of the things that we saw out of this election is that people really support the issues, the progressive reform issues, but are not supporting the candidates. What do you think the reason behind that is, Karen?
Well, I think that for a lot of average voters who are getting inundated by the tons of negative TV ads and mail that gets put out in these campaigns, especially by the independent expenditures funded by people like the real estate developers and the hedge fund managers. With all of that negative mail, people get really turned off to politics. And while they desperately want to see their wages go up, they desperately want to see their schools funded, they're confused about who's actually going to do that, and they're turned off to the idea that anybody's going to actually help them. And I went out on the doors with Jordan's Canvas, and it was really interesting to me talking to voters. People did feel strongly that they needed the state government to step in, raise the wage. They did feel strongly that their public schools are underfunded and need more funding. But they just looked at that sort of, piles of mail that they'd gotten from all the candidates and all the independent expenditure campaigns sitting in their living room or sitting in their garbage, really. And they're just like, oh, they're all bad. And I do think that the elevation of spending and money in our elections has increased people's feeling of being shut out and increased their feeling that nobody's really for them. And so we get this real contradiction where the voters agree with us and agree with our candidates, but either aren't voting or are confused about who to vote for. And in the case of New York, you know, there's a lot of states around the country where people actually passed the minimum wage increase, but then voted for Republican candidates because of that not understanding the connection between the two or being confused about the connection between the two. In New York, we didn't actually have that. In New York, we just had the problem is that people who want to see their wages raised mostly didn't vote because they didn't believe that anybody was going to do anything for them. And that's a lot of what, you know, citizen action, both in our work leading up to the election, but also in our work year round. Our job is to get people to see a way to get the changes that they need in their lives. So our job is to get to talk to voters every day, you know, 365 days a year, not just during election time, to make sure that people know that there's a way to raise the wage, there's a way to get our public schools funded, and we need to organize and mobilize together. And eventually, we need everybody to vote as well.
Jordan, tell me about your work in trying to get students and people on college campuses engaged.
So in the 46th Senate District, there is one main college campus that was inside of the district. And it was kind of interesting because we only had a sliver of the college. So we had all of the freshman dorms, and then we had about another two or three halls as well. And so at first, we had to register these students. They just turned 18 or 19 years old, probably haven't really thought about voting or elections, and so we had two college organizers going around registering students in these dorms.
And how many students did you end up registering?
429 students.
And these are people who had never been registered to vote in that district before, totally new voters?
Yeah, yep.
That's really great. So how many voters were you able to reach out to in total over the course of your canvas?
A little under 6,000 voters.
So, Karen, when we're talking about kind of voters supporting the minimum wage increase and other progressive reforms like that, but not turning out to vote for those candidates that support that, is there enough of a narrative being presented by those candidates that really turns people out and gets people excited to come out to vote?
That's a really good point. I do think that we saw across the country, but also here in New York, that a lot of the candidates didn't run on a clear economic message. And I think had it been clear to the voters which candidates stood for an economic populist message, raising the minimum wage, funding our schools, people would have been more motivated to vote and more motivated to vote for those candidates. And you know, if you look at the races across the country where we have races that were close, U.S. Senate races where the candidates ran on an economic populist message, they won. And where they didn't, they ran on a confused message or more of a centrist message, they lost. And I think in New York, we were really hurt by the fact that both at the top of the ticket and in a lot of the lower both at the top of the ticket and a lot of the Senate races, people ran on a whole wide variety of different issues without a really clear core message. And I think a really clear core economic populist message around raising the wage and making people's daily lives better and from an economic point of view would have made our candidates stronger and would have made voters way more inspired to go vote. People only want to go vote if they feel like it's going to make a difference for them. And they need to hear candidates saying what they're going to do to make my life better. And the core economic pocketbook issues are the most important thing. And that's what people weren't hearing.
Do you think this changes the game plan for the next election in terms of how we're going to be kind of engaging with people?
I think the key thing is what we do when it's not election time. I think, you know, over the next 2 years, Citizen Action is going to definitely continue to and intensify our work at talking to voters every day and making sure that people are involved in state government and knowing what's happening on things like raising the minimum wage and funding our schools and campaign finance reform. And we're going to be involving people in that, but also for those people that don't have the time or interest to get involved, making sure they know what's happening in the legislature and what their state senators are doing. And we're going to make sure that, you know, voters, for example, in SD 46 know what George Amador is up to and all the things that he's doing for those realtors and hedge fund managers that funded his campaign, so that when we get to 2 years from now, they know a lot more about George Amador.
One of the things that came out of this election in the national arena is that Elizabeth Warren was appointed to a leadership position in the U.S. Senate. What do you make of that, and do you think that ties into the overall lack of an economic narrative from mainstream Democrats.
Yeah, I was really happy to see that. That was great news because Elizabeth Warren is one of the best examples of a national Democratic leader who really knows how to speak the truth about what's happening in our economy and what needs to happen differently. And she is very, you know, honest and direct about the changes that we need in our country and in our economy. And I think having Elizabeth Warren and the Warren wing of the Democratic Party be more visible and more dominant in terms of the narrative is really going to help us energize voters in 2 years.
Coalition of community, faith, and labor groups across New York have renewed the call for an increase to New York's $8 an hour minimum wage. Statewide, there are 3 million low-wage workers who make less than $15 an hour. This Thursday, the groups are hosting a teach-in on the fight to raise the minimum wage in downtown Albany. Here to talk about that event are Joanna Nadu, a volunteer with Focus Churches, and Mark Emanation, Citizen Action of New York's Capital Region organizer.
Mark, tell me about what's happening next week at Westminster Presbyterian Church on State Street and why it's happening.
Well, recently there's been a coalition that's been formed, for lack of better things, the Capital District Raise the Wage Coalition, that's working on raising the minimum wage, eliminating the tipped wage worker exemption on the minimum wages, which we can talk a little bit more about, and ending wage theft, which happens all over New York. And that coalition recently started meeting and growing, and we came up with a plan to do teach-ins at some of the cities around the Capital Region, and this is the first of those teach-ins. And in the course of the discussion, it went from a teach-in to a teach-in and mobilization, because it's hoping to pull together people that want to be active in the effort to raise the minimum wage, and to organize them into activity and them organize themselves into activity. So it'll be like part thinking what through the issue and pulling everybody's energies and talents together and then, you know, trying to really launch this. So that's what's happening.
And Joanna, you're a volunteer with Focus Churches. Can you tell us about that and how you got involved and why it's important to the minimum wage fight right now?
Sure. So, I'm just sort of a concerned Albany resident, and I got connected with some folks at the New York State Labor Religion Coalition through Focus Churches. And Focus Churches, I don't even know how many now. It started with 5 churches downtown that are all sort of concerned about hunger and social justice in the Capital District, and particularly in downtown Albany, and coming at from a faith perspective. And so that group has been growing and forming and connecting folks, and they sent people to this Faith for Fair New York retreat that the Labor Religion Coalition put on, where they were teaching us about some of the main issues facing New York State in terms of social justice. And one of the ones that really captured my attention was this issue of having minimum wage workers who are working full-time and can't make ends meet, which is affecting people all across the state. And so it just hit home for me as something that was worth trying to improve, and got connected then with some of the folks, as Mark has mentioned, sort of forming a coalition of what can we do to bring more awareness to the issue and to take action and make change.
So Mark, the minimum wage right now in New York State is $8 an hour, and the living wage for a single adult is about $19 an hour. It's even higher for someone with kids. What do you make of that, and how is that really affecting people right now in New York?
Yeah, the minimum wage, I spent some time looking back at this, and when the minimum wage first is in history is heard about, is Manchester, England, and the other mill towns when the Industrial Revolution was starting. And it was the minimum in the mind of the factory owner, the mill owner, that they could pay to get the person back to work the next day. Basically, the minimum so they could go sleep someplace, eat enough food so they can come return to work. But when the labor unions started to be organized, the minimum wage took on a different kind of thing, where it's the minimum to have a decent life. It's almost reversed back to the Manchester, England thing now, where it's enough just to get you back to work the next day. Albany County, which is a little bit cheaper to live in than some other counties, like, say, where Manhattan is, say, or some of the other big cities. Albany County, we looked at a study that it says $16.86 an hour would be to have a decent life in Albany County, be able to pay your bills and have a little bit for yourself for a single person. So $8 is ridiculous. I have three children, 23, 27, and 30, that are making, one of them making 15, the other two are making in the $14.70, 67 cents range. And they struggle every single day and every week and every month, depending on what it is, to pay the bills and just get through life. And they're double, basically, the minimum wage in New York State, approximately. 175 million Americans live at, below, or right around the poverty level, like over half the population of Americans. And I'm not in that. I make more money than that, and I have trouble making ends meet. Mm-hmm. I was in the market. We were saying, what do we want? We didn't want chicken anymore last night. We wanted hamburger. And so I go in, and a pound of hamburger is $7.79 a pound. And that's, like, incredible. And so how do you do that at $8 an hour? And if they had, when they first established a minimum wage in New York State, separate than the federal minimum wage, which is even lower, right? Federal minimum wage is $7.25 an hour. Right. So if they had done that with indexing when they established that in the early 70s, it would be about $17 an hour right now. And if it indexed it to inflation, and that's what they should have done. And it's outrageous, because at the same time, it'd be one thing if everyone in the country was suffering. But that's not the case. The pie gets bigger every year. The gross domestic product gets bigger every year. People are raking in. Somebody just bought an Andy Warhol picture yesterday for $81 million at an auction in New York City. A single painting. $81 million. And you got people making $8 an hour living in shelters, working full-time and living in shelters.
Yeah, and just to add on to this, I mean, the Focus Church's connection with this issue has primarily been around addressing hunger and sort of homelessness. And they have a breakfast program, they have a food pantry program that are all available to people to get food. And I just assumed that was for, like, homeless, you know, people that didn't have anywhere to live and didn't, obviously weren't working. But it turned out that, like, a lot of the people that go to these food pantries and the breakfast program have jobs, but they just have minimum wage jobs. So they can't actually make enough money to, whether it's have stable lodging or have food. I mean, when we're talking about not having a living wage, we're not talking about having excess money to go throw away on things. We're talking about people who have to choose between having a place to live and having enough food and having transportation to their jobs.
And you're primarily organizing November 20th's event. What's the goal behind it? What are you hoping to get out of it?
I think the immediate goal is to get more people to realize that this is a current issue and an issue that we can do something about. And so the idea is to give them some information from some of the experts to dispel some myths and sort of fears about what happens to our economy if we raise the minimum wage, and to give a face to the issue as well, and then to have time for people to start to think about solutions. And there are some really powerful, I think, options out there. There are groups working to have solutions at the state level that we can all be a part of. And so we really want to, like Mark said, get people mobilized and take action over the next few months after the event. There will be a lot of opportunities for speaking up and showing your support for this issue. But, you know, in the long run, my hope is that we're going to start to connect people. As Mark said, you know, we both of us have jobs and don't have to worry about, you know, exactly where every next meal is coming from. And that's a luxury that I'm aware of. And I feel like the best thing I can do is try to connect with people out there that don't have that luxury and maybe give them a hand up in terms of giving them support and recognizing that their plight is our shared plight.
And one of the myths that you're talking about is that raising the minimum wage will result in a loss of jobs or less job growth. And the data shows that actually the states that raised the minimum wage last year had the highest rate of job growth. What do you make of that, Mark?
Well, I mean, every time they try to raise the minimum wage in New York State, and I've been, because I'm my advanced age, I've been through this a few times, they always come out and say, this will mean we have to cut jobs. This will mean we have to raise prices. This will mean people that make more money will get cuts in their pay and things like that. And the total opposite is it puts more money into the economy. Then more people can buy stuff. Prices lower. They hire more people because you're buying more products to make them and sell them. And wages are set from the bottom up. If they were set from the top down, last year, Bill Gates made $9 billion. So we'd all be making a lot more money if we said, let's base our wages on what he makes. But they base it on the other thing. You go to your employer and say, I want to hire, I need a raise. And they go, well, there's people there making $8 an hour, Jack. I'll just hire one of those. See you later. Mm-hmm. So if everyone's wages went up and you made all of a sudden $15 an hour, everyone could go in and say, you know, really? I've been here 15 years. Shouldn't I be making 17? And so I think that's really a myth around the thing. They also say these are teenagers' jobs, training jobs. And in some cases, teenagers obviously are making this. 1.9 million New Yorkers are making these wages. And 60% of them, something like that, yeah, are you know, people that aren't teenagers. 66% of them are women. So this is like also a women's equality issue. It's like that whole thing. And we haven't even talked about a lot of employers make people work way over the hours that you're supposed to and don't pay you for over them, being either salaried workers or punch in 15 minutes early and we don't pay you for that. And that doesn't seem much on one day, but if you do it over 10 days and 10 months, it's a lot of money they take out of your pocket. And then tipped wage workers in New York State is $5 an hour. And so if you have a bad day, no one comes in, they take your FICA and other stuff out of it, if I'm pronouncing that right, they take that stuff out of it, you're making $3.50 an hour. And that's like outrageous that they can get that away. And it's just outrageous. So if they raise this wage, I always say this, rich people only, no matter how rich you are, you still have one toaster. So if you split that money up more, more people can buy toasters. You know?
Yes.
And they make, then people get to jobs making toasters and selling toasters, and it helps everything out.
Well, and if you're, you know, if you're scraping by and your paycheck gets bigger, and like I said, you now you don't have to make the decision between transportation and food, you can do both. That money goes into your local economy. I mean, when the people are going to be buying bus passes, buying cars, buying gas, buying food at the grocery store, that's money we immediately see going back into the economy. So that's a benefit. And we're going to have Professor Tom Michael from Colgate at the event next Thursday. He's an economist. This is what he does. He'll be speaking to these things. And there'll be a chance for folks to ask questions if they, you know, really want to get to the bottom of this issue and learn more.
And so in last Tuesday's election, Republicans took back the state Senate. They're saying that they're going to block any attempt to raise a minimum wage. Where does that leave us? What do we need to do to keep the fight going?
You know, my thought is that those Republicans and Democrats that were elected previously or in this past election are there to represent the people of New York. And they will respond if the people of New York come out with a clear voice and ask for what we want. There are other interests in the mix that are being very persuasive with those elected officials. But at the end of the day, they answer to the voters. And so as a voter, as a citizen, we all have an opportunity to speak to them and say, look, you answer to us, and here's what we want. So if we can come together and say, we want to see a fair wage for people that live in this great state, then we can come together and speak to them. And one of the things I'm excited about the event is we're going to have in the mobilization section a lot of different, we're going to set them up on tables, a lot of different actions and sort of campaign focuses that people can get involved with. And so you can sort of come and have a one-stop shop for how you can be a part of influencing the governor, let's say, or the legislature, educating, whatever it is that really is feels like the next step to you. You can come and do that and find like-minded people at our event.
Thanks. Thanks, Joanna, Mark. And you can join them at next week's event, Thursday, November 20th, 6 p.m., at the Westminster Presbyterian Church on State Street.
Election for dark money spending, thanks in part to Supreme Court decisions like Citizens United and McCutcheon. Outside Political Action Committee spent $14 million in the New York State Senate elections, with pro-charter school groups like Students First NY and the Real Estate Board of New York, which opposes rent control, leading the way. Since 2001, Democracy Matters has been organizing students to fight back against the influx of money in politics.
Joan, you just wrote a book called Change Election to Change America, Democracy Matters, Student Organizers in Action. Why did you write that book, and why is the fight for fair elections so important to you?
Well, let me answer the second question first, and that really is the answer to the first one, too. I think that the question of fair elections, the question of publicly financed election campaigns, is absolutely the critical moral and political issue of our time. We just went through an election in which we spent close to $4 billion. Well, we didn't. The people who were trying to influence the elections spent $4 billion. And the turnout, as most people know, was the lowest in 70 years. That's a real problem for democracy. You can't really say there's a functioning democracy when so few people vote and when money is such an important factor in who wins, who runs, and what they legislate. So I think that the issue of money in politics is the issue that I've been working on now for about 15 years. And I wrote the book because I believe that it's important for people to understand that the way we fund elections has everything to do with the policies that are legislated, with what politicians essentially create the world for us by passing legislation on everything that affects us. And I think that those politicians are listening to their funders, and they're not listening to the American people as a whole, or New Yorkers, and I think that's wrong.
So in this last election at the state level, in the New York State Senate, outside groups spent $14 million on Senate races alone. $1.7 million came from a PAC tied to New York City real estate groups, and another $4.2 million came from New Yorkers for a Balanced New York, who are seeking to privatize public education and expand charter schools. What kind of influence does this big spending and outside spending have on elections, particularly at the state level?
Well, you know, I think it's obvious that the people who are elected, when that kind of money is floating around, are influenced, if not coerced, to follow the issues or follow the advice that the funders give them. So, you know, it takes a lot of money, even at the state level, to run for office, and most Americans don't have that. And most New Yorkers don't have that. Most New Yorkers can't even think about running for office. But those who do are totally dependent on a very, very small group of people. You know, this is not a situation where most New Yorkers are contributing $20 or $25 to candidates. This is a situation where a very small group of elites who have business before the state want to get what they want to get, and they're using their money to try to in fact, influence legislation and benefit themselves, but not necessarily the rest of us.
Adam, how long have you been working with Democracy Matters on your campus, and how did you first get involved in the fight against money in politics?
Well, actually, I'm a senior now, and so I've been working for the past 3 years, so I'm a freshman. And I joined originally just because, you know, the more I realized, or the more I was coming to something that I really, truly, I realized just plainly that no matter what issue of the day I was interested in, it really did come back to much politics. So whether it's the environment, healthcare, the economy, anything of that sort, the seeming root of it all, the reason that the policies are so distorted from what seemed to be so reasonable and the way it is in reality, really seemed to come back to money and politics. And so I joined Democracy Matters as a freshman, and then I took it over as president my sophomore year. So this is going into my third year leading the Vassar chapter. So it's been a very exciting process, and in the process I've learned quite a bit.
And what kind of work is the Vassar chapter involved in?
Because we operate in a very big swing county in Dutchess County, the state senate goes back and forth. It's really kind of a hub for the fight for elections in New York State. In the past, and we will do in the next upcoming weeks, we will be lobbying the state senator as well as assemblywoman and always doing things towards the governor, advocating for fair elections and the sort. So really, we operate in those two spheres, and we really try and take a pretty active approach. In my time as president, we've become pretty much the number one on Vassar's campus, which is exciting because now slowly but surely this consciousness of the relationship between money and politics is becoming quite actually apparent on Vassar's campus. Like, people are starting to realize it, recognize our name, and also kind of recognize what we stand for and why we stand for it, which is very exciting at this point.
Joan, Democracy Matters was founded in 2001. How has the organizing work and the work you do changed since then? Is it getting any easier to get students involved in this?
Well, there are two answers to this. The main answer is yes, it is. As the amount of money that it takes to raise to run for office increases exponentially in every election cycle, more and more people are aware that there is a big, big problem. In fact, I think that, and polls show that a lot of the people who don't bother voting, particularly young people whose turnout is very low, are doing it because they feel that their vote doesn't count because money is the only thing that does count and students don't have any. You know, they have a lot of debt, but they don't have a lot of money. So in that sense, the worsening of the situation in the state and in the country as a whole, the more that a very tiny fraction of people funds campaigns and therefore controls legislation, I think many more people are aware of that than when we started, certainly. I don't have to make the case that this is a problem anymore so much. On the other hand, you do have to make the case, and it's a hard case to make, that students can do something about this, that this is something which is created by a legislature and can be changed by a legislature. We advocate, as you know, for fair elections, for public financing, and working with organizations like Citizen Action of New York and a very broad coalition of other groups across the state, you know, we have been able to come very, very close to passing public financing. What we're advocating for is to get the system that's been working successfully in New York for the last 25 years expanded to the state as a whole, and it would affect legislators, it would affect the governor's race, and what it would do is let ordinary Americans who aren't rich, and who aren't connected to money run for office with small donations and public financing. So that's something that most people do not know. And I think that our real job is to do two things. First of all, to tell people there's a real alternative that's constitutional and that works in other places. And then third, to convince them that they can actually act and make a difference legislatively and politically. And that's a hard thing to do with anyone right now in the United States, but particularly young people, because they are so disgusted by where politics has gone and the role of big money in politics.
Adam, what do you say to a student who maybe says to you that they don't feel like their work can change things, that they don't feel like their involvement in the fight against money in politics can actually lead to change in legislation?
Well, it's not always the easiest of all answers to give, but certainly, you know, what I've gotten that question a lot, actually, towards the beginning of each year, kind of when students come to our first meeting and kind of ask, well, why should I give up my time that I could be using for other things to help organize? And, you know, every year we kind of have the same thing. And as each person comes back, they realize slowly but surely that they make change. And my response is always, you know, very much that I bring up the example of what we do now is that we have a voter registration drive during freshman orientation, in which basically every student passes by. They don't have to, but every student passes by our booth as they sign a matriculation book. Every freshman student has the opportunity to vote with someone who's trained to do it. And basically, we have increased voter turnout at Vassar exponentially. And the result of that is that although we're nonpartisan, and although we never advocate for a specific candidate, that we actually do make a difference when it comes to state-level politics. And that, you know, we do, the difference is big. And that when Vassar students educate themselves, we created a information pamphlet where Vassar students can educate themselves with it. You know, some of these candidates who are in favor of campaign finance reform, specifically public financing, in the recent election just eked out a win by a margin that really truly does cover the Vassar students. And, you know, it's those kind of small wins. Even if it's just as small as having a conversation, you know, why organize? If you organize just to draw in someone else so they understand better that the system isn't functioning and that change needs to happen, you know, in a certain way, it's those small victories that maybe they're not legislative victories, but those in and of itself create more paths towards victories. And so I think ultimately, like, one of the things that we as a group try and foster is this idea that why fight doesn't necessarily mean there's nothing to do in terms of the legislature or things like that. It's a much deeper process of organizing which we're engaging with, and that, you know, there aren't as many, while there are failures, we see successes in many more different ways than just concrete, there's no point or we win at all. So, you know, if that's kind of a vague answer, it's because it's not an easy question to ask, because as Joan was saying, you know, it's hard to win. But at the same time, in my 3 years here, you know, we really and truly have changed certain consciousness of students. And that in and of itself, if I do say so myself, is really a huge victory. And the biggest reason why I continue to want to be a part of Democracy Matters and organize and fight, because seeing the change on someone's face when they start understanding a complex concept and an abstract concept at that of money and politics really makes a difference for me and really makes this job, this organizing, this struggle worthwhile.
You know, I wanted to say, Roberto, one of the points we make in the book is that the students are ready on our campuses. They're ready to move. They want to do something. And it really is very, very important that non-students and organizations like Citizen Action are actually active. When you can combine students who want to do something with people in their own communities who are out there advocating for education, advocating for fair elections, advocating for the things that many, many people worry about, including students, and they feel like they're not alone, and they see that there are lots of other people out there doing things. So for the last couple of years, the Fair Elections campaign throughout New York has really energized the students because, as I say, they know they're not alone. It's not just what's doing on campus, but Adam can say to people, look, you know, we're part of a bigger movement which is trying to get New York to do the right thing, to reduce the importance of money so that we can legislate and get a lot of important things that people want passed. So, you know, it's true in New York. It isn't true. You know, we have campuses all over the country. And the campuses in states where there aren't activist citizens, it's much, much more difficult to get the students to really think that they can make a difference.
I want to thank you so much for joining me today. And I want to ask you, how can people find out more about both your book, Joan, and Democracy Matters?
Well, the book is, I mean, a lot of people don't like Amazon a whole lot, but the book is available on Amazon. It's called Change Elections to Change America. And Democracy Matters has a very, very busy website. We have lots of information on there about what the students are doing. We have lots of information about money in politics as well. And that URL is very easy, democracymatters.org. And we will continue to do this both in New York and around the country because, as I said, money in politics is the reform that we need in order to allow other reforms. As long as we have this money problem with very, very small group of people controlling the funding process, we're not going to get reform on any other issue. So people are, I think, beginning to understand that and joining together, which is what we need to do for sure.
Thank you.
That's it for this week's Justice Works Radio. Find us next week at citizenactionny.org.